The SME Clinic, brought to you in association with Zenadyn, your accountancy experts in supporting local businesses to grow.
Sean, you're very welcome back to the show and thanks for joining me for this month's SME Clinic.
Hello, Amber. Thanks for having me back. Delighted to be here.
Delighted to have you here. So we're going to be answering listeners' questions on this evening's show. So we're going to start off with one that was actually quite popular that came in. It was around the skills shortage. So the question is, given the skills shortage, how can I make sure I secure the best staff when I'm hiring?
Yeah, Amber, some very good questions came in, delighted to say. I suppose with regard to the skills shortage in hiring, the reality today is that good candidates often have multiple options. And since 2020, as we all know, advances in working from home mean that Kerry-based employees now have access to employers outside of Kerry. So it makes it even more challenging. My advice, firstly, would be to move quickly. I've seen businesses lose excellent candidates because they took 2 weeks to arrange interviews. Secondly, recommend don't focus solely on qualifications. For many small enterprises, attitude, reliability, willingness to learn is really important. So ensure that you're also using the probation period effectively. So the first 6 months, I would always view that as being almost an extension of the interview process, you know, for both the employee and the business itself. So make sure that your contracts have the probation period. Make sure that you're giving good feedback and good training for the employee in the first six months that you both can evaluate the suitableness. Think about what makes your business attractive. So as I mentioned earlier, it is a very competitive market out there for employees. But if you're in an SME, you often can't compete on salary, but you do have other advantages that you can use. For example, you might be able to offer more flexible working, better training opportunities, and emphasize a good culture that small businesses have. These can be more valuable to employee than maybe a bit of extra salary that they might get. So think about those strengths. With my accountant's hat on as well, another thing that's not to be underestimated is the value of using the small benefit scheme. So as we touched on previous discussions here, you can pay €1,500 per year to an employee without tax. It can't be a physical cash payment, but it can be a voucher, you know. So think about that too with your recruitment, you know, with employees. Maybe there's a bonus structure that you could say, for example, there's you know, a small benefit to be earned here for certain goals being achieved in that 6 month period. That extra level of flexibility that small businesses have can be your advantage too in trying to attain good staff.
Absolutely. In terms of this, actually, I suppose ties in as well to kind of hiring new staff, I think, a little bit. But this question of this listener is wondering, would you recommend using AI to screen and select a shortlist for candidates to bring for interview?
It's certainly possible. And, you know, you'll often see recruitment websites even have AI baked into it themselves, you know. But what I would say is that, you know, hiring the right member of staff for an SME, a small business, it's a much more human operation, and your soft skills and judgment skills are very important. Yes, AI can, you know, screen the CVs and maybe give you a shortlist of candidates, but I'm guessing most SMEs here in Kerry are not going to be dealing with a huge volume of CVs anyway. So what I would say, absolutely, AI can help you. For example, it can help you with interview questions, you know, more interesting ways of testing the person in an interview than you might come up with yourself. But overall, I would say that, you know, the human touch is very important, and AI is just an assistant in the recruitment process.
Yeah, that's very good advice there. And as you mentioned, I suppose when it is a small business we're talking about as well, it's important that they get the right candidate for their business. This was an interesting one as well, actually, Sean. This person says, I'm struggling with costs. I'm an SME with 7 staff members and I'm in business for 4 years. I want to save money, but I want the best for my business too. And they're wondering what the best place to focus is on in digitalization and where maybe that they could save costs in the same area.
Yes, Amber. Yeah, this listener posed a very popular question. I think we're all struggling with increased costs of doing business, and families are struggling with increased costs as well. But he or she has hit the nail on the head, I think, with maybe where the solution lies. So they've mentioned digitization. And I did speak some weeks back about digitizing the administration side of your business. So I certainly think that's part of the key. Like, digitization, efficiency and cost saving, they all go hand in hand because time is money. So many owners spend a lot of time on administration and paperwork, which is inefficient. So using digital strategies can free up time to be used more productively. For example, instead of spending time on processing your purchases invoices and your VAT returns and chasing late paying customers, you could be putting that time into increasing your sales, developing new products, better training your staff so that they help run the business that bit better. Mm-hmm. So certainly digitalization strategies like using online accounting, like using tools that read your purchase invoices. Also, if you're a booking-based business, a booking system, like a self-service booking system, is a real time saver. So where you have members of the public looking to book appointments, change appointments, cancel appointments, most of that can be automated. So you're freeing up time for your staff. And finally, and very importantly, I know this is Rich coming from an accountant, but don't always focus on costs. You know, certainly they're important, but it's vital to spend time trying to find ways to increase your income and increase your profitability when you are struggling too. Because there's two solutions to a struggling business: reduce costs and increase your sales and profitability. So look maybe at increasing your sales through combination offers. Can you sell better margin products? Have a look. If you have a decent accounting system, you should be able to track which of your sales are more or less profitable, so you can put more focus on your higher margin products. Can you team up with another business to offer a discount and drive sales growth? So focus on sales growth, in my view, is very important, just as important as reducing costs.
Yeah, it certainly is. And just to mention, I suppose, for that listener as well, that, as you said, you did speak in depth on that as well, and that will be up on the website as well. So if you just type in Radio Kerry, the SME clinic, it'll come up straight away. So just in case you want to listen back to get more tips on that. Another listener was in touch as well then, Sean, and this is quite an interesting one as well, because they say they're about 20 years off retirement, hopefully, they say, and they're wondering, is it too early to start their succession planning? And if it's not, they're wondering, what area should I prioritise when putting this plan in place? So a good question.
It's a great question, Amber. And absolutely, the answer is no, it is not too soon. So I'm guessing that this listener, if they feel they're about 20 years away from retirement, they're probably somewhere in their mid 40s, you know. So I'm guessing you've been running the business for quite a while, and you do need to look at the next level. Then most successful business transactions that I've seen over the years, they've started years before the owner has intended to leave the business. So planning is really key. So the first question is whether the business can operate without you or not. I've always start at that point. Someone said this to me years ago, and it stuck with me, that there is a difference between being self-employed and being a business owner. And I hadn't realised that until I started thinking about it, you know. So if you're self-employed, you are involved in the day-to-day running of your business. You are like an employee, but you are employing yourself. If you are a business owner, you are dipping in and out of the business. You're thinking about strategic direction of the business. You're assisting your staff to do better. And in theory, the business could operate without you, you know, if you really are a business owner. So I that's the first thing I would advise to people. If they're thinking of retirement or succession planning or be able to sell the business, move from being self-employed to being a business owner and ask, well, if I wasn't here now, can this run without me? And some businesses, it's just not possible because you have one-man bands and that, you know. But if you can think about achieving that, you'll certainly have something you can sell. Because if the business relies on you, you will not be able to sell the business, because who would purchase it when you're going riding off into the sunset and you're playing golf or whatever on your retirement? So that's a key thing I would advise that listener to do, is see, can you separate yourself from the day-to-day running of the business? Yeah. They mentioned succession planning, so perhaps they have children who might be involved in the business. So it's important to make sure that if you are passing a business on to the future generation, that you can avail of the tax reliefs that are there. Mm-hmm. So there is business relief and there's agricultural relief. So children who have been involved in the business, or in certain cases, it may not be the case that they have been involved in the past, but they start working in the business, you can receive significant reductions in any gift or tax that you may have to pay on receiving the business. Many times you will not have to pay tax because it brings you under your lifetime limit that you can receive from your parents. Same goes for the person who is retiring from their business. Mm-hmm. There is entrepreneur's relief, which is a very low rate of tax at 10%. On the gain, and there's retirement relief, which kicks in actually over the age of 55, that you can, depending on the value of your business, you can exit tax-free. The last thing I'd say on that point is, mm-hmm. certain businesses around Kerry, and it's great to see over the last 20 years, you know, there's been some great growth in homegrown Kerry family-run businesses. Mm-hmm. If there's serious value being built up in your business, I would say something in the region of beyond 2 to 3 million euro, then that listener should consider a holding company structure. So if their business is in a company and they own the shares personally themselves, that is not as tax efficient. So that's something that we certainly do at Zenithen all the time. Our tax consultants are well used to putting plans in place. But, you know, 20 years is a long time, but it won't be long passing if you need to do, you know, those sort of structural things.
It certainly won't. Great. So tying in with that question as well, this listener says, we have a family business. I'm a second generation and I assumed that my son would take over from me. He has other areas of interest and I don't want him to feel pressured. What alternative plan should I be making for the business now to make sure it continues to thrive when I retire? I plan on working for as long as possible. I feel maybe have another 20 years left in me. So kind of the same as the previous listener in a way.
Yes, very similar, Amber. And a son that it's looking like hasn't decided yet or may not, you know. So I suppose it's important that you don't close the door at this stage, you know, that you keep the opportunity there without pressuring the child as well, which is very important. So I suppose it's becoming very common now. I see this a lot in my work, and it's because there are so many opportunities out there. So for the next generation coming up, in a way, the world is their oyster. They can do so much now. So it's less common for people to go into the family business. So I'm not surprised to hear that. So what I would say is, it's positive that the person is thinking about it early. Think about the alternatives. So for example, what would be the alternatives here? So you may be able to find somebody in your business or a management team in the business that might take over the business after you. So we would have heard probably of the term of a management buyout, an MBO, where generally, if you can identify one person that isn't a family member and has worked with you for a long time, they may or may not be interested in taking over the business, but a team of people generally are. So if you can grow the business to a certain size and you have two or three people coming together, they can generally get the finance to purchase the shares of the business. And with a number of years lead-in period, they can transition into owning the business from yourself. So look internally would be a great one. And then obviously, if that isn't a runner, you then would be looking externally for somebody to purchase the business from you. So it's linked to the previous question, as you were saying, Amber. So it's about, can I extract myself from the business? So if you really think about it and you say, well, God forbid, look, if I got a short illness or something now and I was gone for a month, how is the business going to do, you know? And of course, it's going to have an impact on every business. But if you have the people and the systems and the structures around you that your business will kind of be business as normal, you're on the right track. Mm-hmm. If everything stops during that month, then you really need to look again at how you are, you know, being able to step back and become more of a business owner than a self-employed person.
Absolutely, that's good advice. This listener was in touch in relation to the cost of doing business. They say it's really causing an issue and putting us under pressure at the moment. They're wondering, are there cost savings that I could be making that won't negatively impact the business, or maybe what business finance might be available to them?
Yeah, Amber, I would say the important step is to understand exactly where the money is being spent, you know. So again, you would, if you're only looking at your accounts once a year, you know, for the tax return, you're probably not going to see that. You're going to be relying on your gut instead, which is never great. So have some sort of an accounting system where you can just get your high level figures, like what is my sales, what is my cost of sales, like materials, and what is my employment costs every month. So see a trend there and see, maybe try and understand where that business is losing money. That would be the first thing about the costs. Then I suppose you also need to look at these recurring monthly expenses. I see that with clients all the time. Do you know that we sign up for they're called SaaS, software as a service. You sign up for a monthly subscription to a piece of software and it's great. You're tinkering around with it for a month or two, but then you're not using it. Or you're assuming that a member of your team or staff is using it and they're actually not. So I would do a purge, we'll say, of look at the credit card of the company and see all those monthly recurring fees that are going out and ask, can I cancel them? Because, you know, that 30, 40, 50 euro a month certainly adds up over a year or two. So that would be the low-hanging fruit to look at some of the costs. I suppose the listeners also mentioned on the finance side. Mm-hmm. So before you go down the road of borrowing, and I'm not discouraging borrowing by any means, but you need to see, is this a temporary cash flow fix or is this an underlying problem? Because you don't want to go borrowing money and putting it into an unprofitable business, because that loan will just be eaten up. So if you have decent financial data and you conclude that, no, this is a temporary cash flow problem and X, Y and Z will happen over the coming months and we'll be back in the black again, back to profitability, then certainly loans would be an option. So you've got your major banks. You also have these, I suppose, state support finance, like the Strategic Banking Corporation of Ireland, SBCI. Those loans are available for small business. They're administered by, we call them the high street banks, but they're backed by the taxpayer, so they're easier to get than other loans. And Microfinance Ireland, I would have heard great things about them from smaller clients of mine, that they're able to just get small loans themselves. Could be 10, 12 grand for a piece of equipment that they might use, so they would be the options on it. But make sure that you're not borrowing to fix unprofitability would be the thing. If it's just cash flow, then that's fine.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's great advice. I think we just have about time for one more, Sean. Mm-hmm. So this is in relation to upskilling. So this listener wants to know, are there upskilling courses available so I can retrain my staff and help them grow, but costs are tight at the moment. So are there free options available for upskilling?
Absolutely, Amber. There are. So the first port of call there would be the local enterprise office, which here in Kerry, they provide great support to a lot of our clients in the SME sector, and through the SkillNets programme. I'm a product of that myself. I did a course with Helen Burns there a number of years ago, and it was, you know, business leadership. And God, it was 6 or 7 years ago. I still draw on things I learned to that, you know, to this day. So I would absolutely recommend it. Those are subsidised courses. It's more of an investment in your time than in money. So look at SkillNet Ireland and see what courses are offered there. They're often very good courses and well subsidised as well, would be my advice.
They certainly are, and they're fantastic, and we've had them on the programme before, and they have such a wide range of options as well, so it's fantastic. But Sean, thanks so much. We've gotten through a load there, and I think we've answered a lot of questions, even, you know, and given a lot of advice outside of the questions that we've asked as well. So thanks so much for your time, and no doubt we'll probably be talking to you again next month for the next session of the SME Clinic. But thank you for joining
Very welcome, Amber. Hopefully we will.
The SME Clinic, brought to you in association with Zenedin, your accountancy experts in supporting local businesses to grow.